American Craftsman podcast is sponsored by Hayfla. Hayfla offers a wide range of products and solutions for the woodworking and furniture making industries, from hinges and drawer slides to connectors and dowels, sandpaper, shop carts, wood glue, and everything in between. Exclusive product lines such as Lux LED lighting and Slido door hardware ensure that every project you create is built to last. Learn more at Hayfla.com.
Ah, I feel good. Welcome back. We've got two people who have never done a podcast. I was trying to think of a clever way to say it, but I couldn't think of anything.
not anything that's G-rated anyway.
Right, yeah. We're popping podcast cherries today on the show. We've got Eric and Dave from Colonial Saw.
Hey,
welcome
guys
to the show. Dave came down from Massachusetts. Eric came from Michigan.
I did.
And we... And actually, John came by. We shot some video on the Street Big, which is a lot of fun. And we'll see what gets stitched together. I'll be excited to see, you know, what comes out.
I'm not worried or concerned. I'm excited.
It's fun to do.
Yeah.
You guys were one take wonders. I got to be an observer, not a participant. So
I was shocked. I'm normally several takes.
I'm telling you, John's got a way of... I don't know. I think he's a big part of it, of just sort of, he'll give like one little bit of guidance and it's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then you just kind of flow with it.
He has the vision. He's a director. So he's giving you the direction.
Yeah.
So all we had to do is talk about the topic. All right. He provided some staging, blocking, and a little bit of direction. And the two of you are natural. So it was like, I think we only had to do two takes or retakes.
Yeah.
Out of, I don't know what this will look like in the end in a week or two's time, but I was impressed and I thought it came across wonderful, and hopefully the viewers who watch the video will take a look at it, not just enjoy, but learn. I mean, that's the whole purpose of what you guys do here and create, and why we've partnered and are now collaborating on Dave and I's first podcast. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the cool thing about, sorry. But I thought I unplugged my microphone. The cool thing about the Today's Craftsman channel is I think, you know, we're going to expose a lot of people who have never even seen a saw like the Street Big to a saw like this. You know, I didn't know anything about Street Big until we found out about the contest. Like, I didn't know that panel saws like that existed. And, you know, I own a shop.
Yeah. Our counterpart, Chris Hoffman, the Lamello product manager, said the same thing. He used to run his own shop as well and didn't know anything about vertical panel saws for most of his existence. Came across one and thought that it was the best thing since sliced bread, and then came to work with us and now knows what a Street Big is, which is even better than the one he had. It's eye-opening. And we wish more people knew about it intrinsically. But
It's tough. You know, like I'm sort of, and Rob and I, Green Street, are in this weird period where we're like growing from a professional shop, but growing from like just a small cabinet shop to more of an industrial shop, and learning about all of these different machines that exist that, you know, if you're not reading industrial publications, you're not coming across these machines. Like a pass-through, we were talking about pass-through CNC, like a stand that's what you call them, right? Pastor?
Yeah, through feed CNC.
I didn't know that that was even a thing until, you know, probably a couple months ago. Mm. You just have to run into the right person or just see, you know, you have to have a machinery salesman come in and tell you about these things. That's why, you know, I was talking about Brian before, having a guy who's run all of these crazy machines and built his own machines. Like that, that's indispensable information for guys like me who are, you know, I have aspirations of growing the business into something that's more automated and bigger and faster. And, you know, so it's good to get the information out.
Well, you're exposing a vacuum, right? There's a absence of knowledge and information. And that's what's so great about what you guys do at Green Street and Today's Craftsman is about exposure, because unless you have a, not just a salesman, a machinery salesperson is someone who tries to sell you something, but a machinery partner that's there to help you grow your business, they're not going to help you and hold your hand and walk you through the process. Mm-hmm. With a void there, your only other opportunity is to go to the big show.
Right. And then you have all that information to try and digest.
Correct. You have 2, 3, 4 days where you have to process everything all at once. It's drinking from a fire hose versus being able to plant the seed, an idea, water that seed and say, hey, look, I've been in so many other shops and other applications and situations. You may want to consider this. And then when the timing is right, instead of that 2 or 3 day period of a show, when it's mutually beneficial for you to leave your shop, right? You're a two-man shop. You have 4 jobs going on right now. So you have to balance, oh, well, I got Colonial Saw in town. I got to do a video. And then, oh, I want them to help us on a podcast. And then I got to call that client back. Oh, by the way, I have to book flights and go to a trade show. That's not always convenient. Yeah. So like you said, having Brian talk about it and plant seeds where it gets you on the right path, it's a wonderful thing. And hopefully our collaboration in the coming months and years, we can build on that to help others, not just to promote Strebig, of course. Selfishly, Dave and I want that, but the information and when you can provide a resource or be a resource, I think is a wonderful asset and attribute to provide to the audience that listens and watches you guys.
Yeah, when you have a good product, it's easy, you know, it just comes natural because, you know, you don't have to... We don't have to embellish anything about that saw. You just stand next to it. You could just rattle off all of these reasons why it's such a good machine. You know, there's never been like one of those, you know, with the slider, it's like every 5 minutes you're like, oh man, this stupid thing, you know, this or that. It's like, I haven't run into that with that saw yet. It just works. It's like so complicated and so simple at the same time,
right,
you know?
Right.
Just all the little kickstand that stops the sheet from, you know, from being pushed when you're doing it horizontal. Yeah.
Right.
What I'd like to do is build like maybe like a little ramp that goes up.
Yeah. Some guys have built staging platforms to the right of the saw that they stack their sheets up on that they're going to load onto it.
That stuff would be cool.
And then just push them onto the saw from there and make it at the same height as the rollers.
Yeah, like as you guys go out, because I know you said you're going out to a couple other shops, anything like that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that like, if I'm looking for a machine, I want to see other people using it and how they're using it and all of these little doodads that they create, you know, to make it easier and better. That's cool stuff. You know, when you're shopping for a machine, it's nice to see what's possible, you know, what, because every, you know, maybe Strebig has something like that for the bigger saws. I don't know, but it's like, you know, not everything is one size fits all. So like we all need to bring a machine into our shop and then, you know, make it fit our own space and our own workflow. So inevitably you're going to be building something or coming up with an idea of how to, you know, make it work for you. So seeing the way other people do it is huge information.
Yeah. People have definitely tailored or, you know, made custom applications that go into their or feed their saw or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's neat to go out and see those things. I've come across some things in my time that, wow, it's really cool. I don't know how come nobody else has thought of that or something. But
well, the people listening to this won't be able to see the benefit of the picture I just pulled up on my phone, but I'll share it with you after we're done. But there's an Amish customer in Illinois that uses a Strebig and literally cuts strips, rolls them off the bottom rollers into a tilt up cart that then immediately feeds their edge bander. So I'll share that with you. And if you decide to design something or make it a project for today's woodworker, they'll be great. But that's the importance of having a relationship with your machinery rep, not your sales guy, machinery rep who's really saying, hey, I've seen this here and seen that there and help you. That you might think about this going back to my earlier comments about planting a seed or an idea on that. But no, Dave's right. You know, just like you're getting more and more into cabinetry and case goods. How many different ways are there to build a box?
There's a lot. You just have to settle on one.
Well, that's isn't that what Streetvig did? They had to settle on one machine or one design or one level of technology. But you know, you've built a clipboard on your machine mm-hmm. already. You've done a little tweaking and how you've staged stuff. You're going to adapt and customize it to your environment and to your setting. And it's pretty amazing to see what you guys have done here and the path that you're on, both you and Rob. It's spectacular.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I've got the digital stop extension now. I got that on my to-do list. I was thinking something for cutting like laminate. You know, it'd be nice to have something that's like an easy sort of hold, you know, because the sheet always wants to like roll back up into a roll. So something that I could like, you know, hold down one end. I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah, I can help you with that. There's a couple of little claws that you can make
yeah.
that just kind of hang on the grid to keep those upper corners up in place. And yeah, I'll go out and show you that.
Do you guys want to give like a history of Streetvig or of Colonial Saw or both? Or, I mean, we could talk about, we don't even have to talk about any of those things. We could talk about whatever you want, but it might be interesting.
Well, from your videos, you know, I've been sitting on the sidelines watching. And of course, you know, the reason we're sitting here is that we chose you guys to win a Streetvig, but that's because you guys do a much better job. There are a lot of content creators online that put out content, but what's real content that has credence behind it and that is authenticity and that comes across as more genuine? We feel that you guys did that, and that's why we decided to partner with you, and in turn, you guys have decided to show that same reciprocity and partner with us. But overall, and of course, now I'm starting to ramble because I'm getting nervous on these, trying to think, make sure I sound good.
It's all right. This is only going to be on the internet forever. Oh,
even more pressure. I feel the burden.
No pressure.
But the stuff that I've seen from the sidelines, I don't think we really have gotten into Kelowna. It's always been about Streetvig. And what's important, and that's a perfect thing, you really just teed it up for us to talk. And I'm going to let Dave, because I'm newer to Colonial. I've been at the company 18 months, been in the industry a long time. But Dave, we call him Professor Streetvig. He's the product manager. He's been at Colonial. I won't reveal how long because we don't want to tip off his actual age. But he's the professor for a reason. But what else, as I let him segue into talking about Colonial on the historical side, this year is our 50th year of being the importer for Streetvig.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So Streetvig is a manufacturer and an engineering company. They don't sell. They only use distribution. So they're not a marketing company or a sales company. They're an engineering firm. And that's really where the quality comes from. And the Colonial Saw has been around 75 years, but we've been selling Streetvig for 50. So we'll have some stuff coming out later this year, some promotional items. But with that, I want Dave to talk about Colonial because, you know, he's a tenured employee. He's been there a while. He's seen a lot. And he can give us a quick recap version of the history of Colonial.
Sure, yeah. Like Eric said, we're celebrating our 75th anniversary this year, Colonial Saw, being in business in 1949. It didn't start out with Streetvig. It started out with the other products that Eric helps sell, the grinding or sharpening machines that sharpen all the woodworking tools and things. But it's a family-owned business. The third generation now is running the company, and but they, you know, we've had a Swiss connection for all this time, and that's how we came to be the Streetvig distributors, as well as the Lamello, which is also Swiss distributors. Some of the grinding machines going back in time were also Swiss. So it all boils down to a Swiss connection.
Is the family Swiss?
No,
I think you might have told me some of this, but I can't remember what the origin, what the Swiss connection was.
No, that was it. that goes back to a relationship with this grinding machine manufacturer. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the original came about, but there was a particular family in Switzerland that was all about machines and the grinding machines, and three brothers doing different parts of the business. And we developed the relationship with the grinding or the sharpening machine brother, if you will. And from there, it grew into the Striebig and the Lamello lines. But pardon me here. Still fighting off a cold. So I get to clear my throat every so often.
If you want.
Oh, thanks.
No pressure.
got a bunch of those in the car.
Shouldn't it be a Ricola if we're talking about Swiss? Oh, yeah.
I don't know if those are sugar-free. I usually do the sugar-free cough drops, and I don't think Ricola has a...
Yeah, I haven't found it. So. Oh, wow, that really crackles on the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry about that, folks.
Yeah, and of course my phone rang, which is pretty much something that always happens.
Dave, let me remind you, it's only on the internet forever now. Don't ramble like me.
So what else? As Eric once again said, we're celebrating our 50th year of partnership with Striebig, also Lamello, as it turns out. Both 50 years old. And yeah, the exclusive importers and distributors for both of those product lines in the United States and North America. And they've been marvelous partners to work with. The Swiss, you know, they build phenomenally engineered and built products. Mm-hmm. So they're a pleasure to represent. They're you know, fanatical about the quality that comes out of their factories. So we don't have to, you know, apologize for much.
Yeah.
we put a saw in, and for the most part, we don't hear from them other than, you know, thanks very much.
I've seen some of the photos of Striebigs that are like, I don't even know how old, you know, they look completely different, like look sort of rudimentary, like,
yep.
You know, like they might be like 40 or 50 years old.
Yeah. The oldest ones we see around in general are in the 30 to 40 year range, but there's a bunch of those.
That's a long time, there. Especially in, you know, when you think about, you know, you might see a cabinet saw that's 100 years old, but something that is 100 years old is more likely to last 100 years than something that's, you know, 40 years old. I don't know if I'm articulating that right, but you get what I mean. Like, yeah. Newer stuff doesn't last as long.
Right.
But to have like a panel saw that's 40 years old, that's a big deal. You know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, sometimes we approach those folks and try to say, wouldn't you like to upgrade to some of the new features? And oftentimes the response we get back is, no, works fine.
It's still square after decades. Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, we still have most of the parts available for that saw on the shelf. So it's hard sometimes for them to justify.
That's a big thing too.
Features.
You know, we had that Minimax slider, and so I got in touch with, who was it? Who's the parent? SEM, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have a manual. They didn't have any parts. They didn't have any exploded view, nothing from 1999.
Wow.
Zero. I couldn't even get a manual for the saw.
Oh.
So that's a huge thing. I mean, that's like a big allure of Festool for a lot of people. It's like they guarantee that for 10 years they're going to have parts, you know, these things.
That's a CE regulation. So if you're a manufacturer in Europe, you have to have parts even if you go out of business for 10 years. So once you get beyond that, of course, if there's consolidation in the industry or someone goes out of business, that can be a worry. So the Europeans make that a requirement that you have to stock parts. Hmm. Now, the better manufacturers will stock parts much longer. And of course, as Dave mentioned, and we just briefly discussed, if you have a saw that's 30 years old, you need to have parts on the shelf for 30 years. And we take a lot of pride in having part availability. We have millions of dollars in spare parts.
Wow.
So when we have to do inventory every year and do a manual recount, it's
get to count those parts every year.
We're a smaller family run company. And then all of a sudden they say, hey, guess what? It's time for the Christmas party. Oh, by the way, we're doing inventory the 2 days beforehand.
Hope the drinks are stiff.
luckily we're looking as we're growing a growing company as well, we can add some automation and better processes, but it's also a benefit, right? You know, the newbies are usually the ones that get thrown into that. Luckily, mm-hmm. I'm a remote office employee, so that
we're going to fly in from Michigan to do the inventory.
The first year, that's what it was. It was not fun, but the true benefit is that you get to see the amount of parts that are on the shelf and the commitment that both Strebig and Colonial have made to make sure that our customers are taken care of. Mm-hmm. The one thing that Dave didn't mention is how many Strebigs we've sold. And you earlier mentioned, Jeff, saying, oh, well, I didn't even know about vertical panel saws. We have over 3,000 in the U.S.
Wow.
So for us, it's to make sure we continue to educate and inform. Right. And that's where this content is valuable, is to talk about the benefits and not just to say, oh, yeah, this is cutting squares and rectangles and plywood. It's the other application. So hopefully the video we shot and the future content that you create will continue to be a benefit and inform the guys that don't have the great machinery sales guys in their backyard.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
It is like a one size fits all. You know, it does more than, like you said, it does more than just cut square and rectangular parts. You know, we talked about like the straight line ripping and all that kind of stuff, you know, making these fixtures so that you can put a bevel on an entry door, you know, whatever. Things that are difficult to do, well, you know, difficult or just something else that you could do on a slider. But it's like, you don't have to sacrifice all of those things by getting a vertical. It's not like, you know, it's not one or the other. You can sort of have everything.
Right, right. And I know your podcast is primarily going to woodworkers, but part of the reason that your saw didn't come standard with a scoring saw on it is because we sell machines to all different types of industries. We mm-hmm. sell them to guys cutting plastics, which we're about to go see one tomorrow morning. And aluminum guys and solid surface guys.
Yep.
We're well known in the solid surface, the Corian countertop industry. None of those people would have any use ever for a scoring saw. So that's why it's not standard equipment like it is on a sliding table saw. A sliding table saw is pretty much you're going to throw sheets of wood through there.
Yeah. So we cut a couple sheets of solid surface on the slider, and that was brutal.
Have you had a chance to do it on the Strebig yet?
No, okay. We haven't. I told you I cut that compact laminate, which I don't know if you guys have any experience with that, but it is a horrible material. it's Wilson Art Solicore is the particular one that we use, but it's basically like solid resin impregnated whatever, but it's a solid laminate, like a half inch thick,
like a phenolic almost.
Yeah. And it was brutal to cut. Drilling hole, I went through so many bits and broke bits off, so trying to build cabinets out of that was brutal.
And how did it cut on the Strebig?
The Strebig did fine, but the tooling was like wrecked like immediately. Mm-hmm. Even using like what Wilson Art's recommended tooling was, you know, the hook angles, everything. It was bad.
Maybe we can provide a little help there too on the tooling aspect of it.
I'm saying no to any time. If anyone ever recommends that again, I'm just saying no, but.
No, you just charge a PETA fee, right?
Yeah. We talk about that, the PETA fee. That's like, if you have to go to New York, there's a big PETA fee.
Well, now you have to charge for a surge toll pricing.
Yeah.
I mean, that news is coming all the way to me in Michigan.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw that, Dave.
No, I didn't. No.
I think it goes into effect this month, or did it already?
I saw it online and or on news in Michigan, and they said that if you want to go basically below 40th Street, it's going to cost you $15 as a private vehicle and 25 as a commercial vehicle. Not that the Holland and Lincoln and the PETA. GW aren't bargains. Inexpensive already.
Right. I think I paid 17 something going over the GWB 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I'll stay in Michigan.
Yeah. I'm curious what that trip to Boston cost, like between gas and tolls. Probably $200, you know?
You're right. Yeah. But there are tolls, fees, gas, let alone time.
Yeah. That was a long day. That was left at 4 a.m., got back to the shop at 5 p.m.
Oh, no. That's rough. That's a lot of coffee and a lot of bathroom breaks.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought one of those, like, I don't even know what you call it. It's like a urinal, you know, like a bottle that you pee in.
Oh, so you're a professional trucker now?
Yeah, thankfully I didn't have to use it, but it was like just in case of emergency, you know, because we've had that before, like looking for parking in Jersey City or Hoboken. You know, you could be driving around in circles for 2 hours. And it's not like you could just like stop and, you know, there's no like Wawa. Oh, is this that guy? There's someone who goes and gets, there's a barbershop across the street. It's not the same guy. He pulls up with his windows down and the music is so loud that it literally rattles that window.
Nice. Nice.
Let's see. What could I pick your guys' brain on? I don't know. What do you got? What's something that the listeners would want to know that isn't like something that's out there?
So who typically, so we know you have Today's Craftsman for mm-hmm. the weekend. That's your Saturday partnership with John.
Yep.
We know, of course, Green Street, you guys do a phenomenal job on Instagram and social media. Who's listening to the podcast? Because I think that'll determine what we talk about and we can cover.
I think it's a lot of fellow cabinet makers, furniture makers. And then we also have more of like the hobby level woodworker in there as well. But a lot of other business owners, I think, you know, we used to get into the business stuff a fair bit.
So we touched on it already. So from the professional side, you know, find a good machine partner. We use distribution and we're careful to select who we use to partner with, because it's not the quality of the machine, it's the quality of the support. Mm-hmm. And the support isn't just that you have parts and someone who answers the phone. It's someone that's going to be there for you. So when you're looking at equipment, I think is how we can focus in on is the quality of the equipment and knowing that it's going to hold up. So for Streebig, we're spoiled because there aren't a lot of moving parts. It's not a complicated machine until you get into the higher level machines where you have automation.
Oh, yeah, that is something that I wanted to ask about.
So we can pause on that. But, you know, we walked out your shop. I've seen your YouTube channel and I walked out. You guys have a good size facility. It's a lot more in there. And of course you're filling it up. You know, you have a line boring machine, a construction boring machine, and everybody's favorite machine that never has issues, the edge bander. Right. So, you know, when you have machinery, you know, and then you're not going to always buy every machine from the same vendor because certain companies do a better job with certain technologies, yep. Right? You know, certain companies do a really good job with CNC. Other companies do a really good job with edge banders. Other companies do a good job with sanding. And although it's nice to have one single source that you can leverage a relationship, that could be one business strategy, if we can talk about it from a business perspective, that you could hold them accountable, but they also have all your eggs in one basket.
And we've heard, you know, we've heard through the grapevine how that sort of allegiance doesn't always really play a factor. You know, you might be, I know we're not talking about Festool, but we'll say Festool. Your shop is full of Festool. You have every Festool tool and you have an issue and call them up and they say, yeah, you know, it's going to be 6 weeks until we have that part. You know, if you put all your eggs into that one basket, it's not necessarily going to work out in your favor.
So it could be where you like three or four machines or from, you know, or three or four technologies from one vendor, but you want to hold that vendor accountable. So you buy specifically another, maybe a B-level machine or their best in class technology from that company. That is one philosophy, but you're right. They don't always have parts. They don't always have technicians, because ultimately if your machine goes down, the machine, this industry, there isn't a bunch of Maytag guys sitting next to a phone waiting for the phone to ring to drive over to you.
Right.
You're generally going to need someone that can support you and have someone that, first of all, picks up the phone to troubleshoot. Most of the time, everybody can troubleshoot over the phone. 90% of problems can be fixed over the phone. It's that 10%. What do we do? How fast can we get help that is beyond the the capability of troubleshooting over a phone, or maybe even remote diagnostics if you're into something with PLC or controls or something that's CNC driven with servos, that you need someone there not 2 weeks or 4 weeks later, or that takes 4 or 6 weeks to get a part. You need to get back up and running because you can't go to your customer and say it's a 2 week delay.
Yeah, sorry, the edge banner's down. We're going to push the job.
Yeah, or your saw is down, or the CNC, whatever the machine is. So it's really critical that when you work with your partners that you know that you can get the support no matter what the technology is, so that we can keep it vanilla. And if we use Festool, then we know they make great stuff and it's not big machines. But there is the other strategy is to buy best in class. But then you have a rainbow shop. Mm-hmm. Where every machine is a different color. So you buy the best edge bander on the market, the best CNC, the best vertical, the best slider, the best joiner. And that's another philosophy. But that's a discussion that you should have with your partners, your, you know, the ownership team or the management team of the company, because you want your values aligned with the partners you work with.
Yeah.
To me, that's really my recommendation being in this industry for so long is you want to work with like-minded people. And then develop your acquisition strategy. And as you go to build the business, the infrastructure that you're going to put in place. So hopefully that helps out the machinery folks that are listening to you. Those are the things to consider. There's two strategies, not either one or neither one is good or better than the other. They're just different. And look at your value system and look at who your local resources are. From the hobbyist side, you know, you've got a dream shop, right? You're way surpassed Norm Abrams ever was, right?
I went back and watched some New Yankee Workshop, and I'm like, man, some of this stuff that Norm is doing is kind of hacky.
I think I have to call him up and email him and say, you're getting shade thrown your way. You got to come out of retirement.
That'd be cool.
Yes.
So no, hopefully that's some benefit to the team, but it's, you need partners and, yeah, and you need value systems that are aligned. That would be my recommendation and whatever strategy you take or path you choose to build your business. And that's our philosophy is we don't go out there trying to sell a street big. We try to find a partner because it's a long-term partnership. It's a marriage. You're going to have a saw from us for 30 years. So when we look at our dealers and distributors and how we treat our customers, you know, a lot of our sales are repeat customers because they are so impressed. And yes, technology changes. And now hopefully I'm teeing this up perfectly for you, Jeff, that we can talk about the higher automation machines. Yeah. You know, as you grow, right, you know, you have this awesome 5x10 saw, but you had some interesting Eggers material up back that you couldn't cut.
Yep.
You can finally say the Striebig couldn't cut it.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
I'm going to have to lop them down the middle first.
Yeah. We can help you with that one day.
I was going to say too, when you're considering machinery, you have to think about automation. And, you know, if I have all of these machines from different manufacturers, are they going to be able to communicate with one another? You know, can I go from an edge bander to a brush, you know, whatever, to a drilling machine, and they're going to be able to talk to one another?
With edge banding, it's not as critical.
Yeah, because it's kind of just
a standalone machine. Yeah. Having a return conveyor, it's nice to dial in the return conveyor into the controller. But when you look at cut band bore, so the cutting and the boring, or if you're going nested base router, and then you want to do bore and dowel, right? You're getting into frameless cabinetry. It gets very expensive to have to post out. So for those that are working with design software, whether it's Cabinet Vision, KCD, Mosaic, you can use design software and it's all front end. It's the rendering, it's the design element. It's really your sales tool that you enhance. And then behind the scenes, of course, everything is run on G-code, just like the machines, but your interface can be different. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, no matter who your software partner is, you're now paying a different post for the CNC or the beam saw, a different post for the bore and dowel, and then another post. So these are post processors so that your design software can talk to the machine. And of course, then we get into barcoding. And I'm always happy to come back for a future visit if we want to talk about manufacturing and best processes.
Oh, yeah.
From my former life. But that gets expensive. Post processors are thousands of dollars. So you spend $50,000, $75,000 on a machine or $100,000. You then have 5,000 for a post. Then you have to get it integrated. You got to set up the tool library. It's not cheap.
And you probably need a guy to run it because, you know, if it's a new, if it's new for the shop, there's probably not someone there that knows how to, you know, do all this.
That's the trade-off with automation. The automation makes it easy, but there is no such thing as truly an easy button. Someone had to create and engineer that easy button. So then the office. So we're sitting in your office doing this podcast. This is where all the intelligence needs to be. Mm-hmm. But just because you dumb down the operator doesn't mean you can have a dumb operator.
Right.
They need to understand that when a tool's getting dull and have visual inspection to parts coming off or part quality, whether it's a blade or a bit or a drill, that I'm still producing a quality product as we did in the video shoot today. You know, the impact of, you know, starting with quality and how it impacts all your secondary and tertiary processes in your manufacturing process throughout the shop and ultimately when you get to assembly. So hopefully that's of help and insight.
Oh yeah,
to the team. So even if you're working in your two car garage, buy the best that you can and find partners that you work with. Even if it's your local woodcraft store, find someone that's knowledgeable, or go to an independent. Find people who are willing to work with you and partner with you and help you, not just sell to you.
Yeah, we've always found that face to face. You know, you saw Rich from Hayfla stop by. We always, you know, we want our sales reps, outside sales reps, to come here so we can talk to them. They can tell us what they have, what's new. You know, they can look at the shop and say, I see you're using this or you're doing that. We have this, you know. I can't spend all day here on the computer trying to figure out what these new products are, how I can use them, how to integrate them into what we're already doing. You know, that's where we lean on the outside sales reps to educate us. And machinery is no different.
Well, and that's the importance of taking a meeting or taking an appointment and also making an appointment, right? That's a two-way street. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to make the time. You can't be just so busy wrapped up in your business that you're not willing to listen to new ideas.
Yep.
So don't be afraid that, you know, if you're a small shop that, you know, you're just running around with your hair on fire, make the time. Your sales guy is going to, if they're truly a partner, they're going to work around your schedule and say, hey, I'll come back on Fridays in the afternoon when I know you're back from doing your jobs, because then that means they're going to partner with you. So don't be afraid to be transparent. So, you know, you get more no's before you get your yes when you're in sales. So it's better to hear a no. It means you get faster to your next yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as much as this is a traditional industry, things still change mm-hmm. over time. Connectors, things.
Yeah.
There's different ways of doing things. They're constantly being developed and changed. So it's you know, it's one way to stay up with it.
And having a good relationship, you know, like, so we just got the boring machine and I'm exploring, you know, using Conformats for putting together melamine cabinets. So Rich brought me over some Conformat screws so that I can make sure that before I buy a minimum of 1,000, which not a crazy amount, but I don't want 1,000 screws kicking around the shop that I can't use. You know, they're going to end up being given away or something.
Kind of an inventory.
Yeah.
year after that.
No inventory going on here. You know, he brought me over a couple dozen so I can try them out and make sure that that's what I need before I go ahead and buy them. So if you don't have a relationship with your salespeople, you can't do things like that, you know? If you're buying your stuff off of, you know, just from a cart online versus with a salesperson, you know, you don't get the same treatment.
It goes back to values.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, that's a big thing. You know, we have like the Richelieu guy will come in and say, oh, I see you're buying F70s. I can beat Hayfla's price. I'm like, it's not about the price, you know? You're going to save me $2 a pair. What's that going to save me in a year? If I use 500 slides in a year as a two-man shop, that's a lot. So you're going to save me $1,000. But it's not about $1,000, you know? Hey, we have a great relationship with Hayfla. Everything that they stand for, we stand for, and vice versa. So it's important, I think, especially as you're growing your business too, like you said, align yourself with people who share the same values, and you know, it puts you in the right this is three phone calls. Put you in the right mindset for growth, you know?
A machine person or a hardware person that looks at it as a transaction is a fool, right? The first sale is always the hardest because that's where you're establishing the relationship and building trust. And then there's a phrase, I'm quoting somebody else. It's not an Eric original, but, you know, trust is the currency of all relationships. Well, once you earn that trust, it's forever until it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
So there's also an accountability and a responsibility to honor that in the spirit of that partnership. So no, I think you guys are on a wonderful path, and hopefully Dave and I come back in 2 years' time and you've grown the business and you say you want some automation, and we can talk about a post-processor from your design software. And instead of a 5x10 street big, you've got a 7x15 control with full automation.
So I think I think it was a control with the vacuum pods on the bottom.
Yep. Yep. To enable you to trim the bottom edge of that panel. Yeah. So it's perfectly straight as it rolls back and forth on the rollers. And so that's a big one. And being able to cut the nearly 7 foot tall sheets of Egger on the panel saw without having to take a track saw or something to cut it down first.
And those are fully automatic, like you just hit a button and the head of the saw plunges and makes the cut.
Yep. And stops at the end of the cut and returns if you so desire. And in both directions, both vertically and horizontally. So yeah. And we even have those machines where, you know, they can optimize the panel for you. They take your output from your mosaic, and the post will be in the Strabic software so that it decides how that cut list should be optimized. And on that machine, the saw will go into position. You say, I want to make, okay, it's time to make the next cut. You press the flashing blue button and the saw will go into position ready to make that cut for you.
Wow.
And then you just have to press the go button and it does it. Same with the next cut.
Similar setup where there's different vertical cutting stations.
Mm-hmm. And it'll go automatically to the next correct cutting station.
Is the machine operable manually as well?
It is. Yeah.
If you just want
to go up and cut a piece yourself, both completely manual, you could push the saw just like you're doing now, or, you know, not following an optimization, but you want it to travel automatically.
You just punch in some dimensions.
You set up the dimension for the saw to go there, or the stop to go there, and press the go button again. It does it automatically, but you've set up the cut.
Right. Wow. So, what about sheet loading? Is that manual or semi-automated?
It's still manual. Mm-hmm. Some people, you know, by the time they're cutting, you know, over 50 sheets a day, they're going to want, especially if they're bigger sheets like those Egger sheets, I don't want to do that manually. They do it with a vacuum lift.
Yeah, I've been looking into those.
A tilting head vacuum lift, you know, because everybody's going to bring it into your shop horizontal.
Yeah.
But if you want to, you know, put it onto the vertical saw, you need a tilting head vacuum lift.
Yeah, so all that stuff.
Light work of it.
All that stuff that's on the A-frame carts. Again, I was here by myself and I had to get all of it stood up and up onto the... Yeah. Onto the cart. I mean, it's not easy. You saw I had bought those panel lifters or whatever they're called. They work pretty good, but when you get into like a 5x9, I'm only 5'8".
Yeah.
So it's like above my head. So there's no, you know, there's no lifting from the top of a 5x9 with one of those things.
Yeah. I think there's some of those grippers that can lift from the edge of the sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can, even though the sheet's 7 feet tall, you could lift it from about 3 feet, you know, where it's comfortable
for the lift. So.
Or those European sheets from Egger, right? That I don't know if your viewers know that, or viewers, listeners in this case, are on a podcast. This is still new for me. Is a European half sheet, when we talked about this in the shop, is 7x9. A European full sheet is 7x18. Of course, I'm rounding to make it easy for us Americans instead of using the metric system. But the advantage is, of course, you've shown this in some of the videos, the material selection, the colors. So, you know, the viewers who watch your videos, but they might not realize, because we're talking about this control model that is has all this automation feature. It has that screen machine. So as Dave talked about, you can take a design, export a CSV, optimize, and then the saw is the next button. You just hit next, next, next. It's basically a vertical beam saw. That, of course, is the ultimate. Not to say you're there or you won't get there at some point, but for your viewers, you have our smallest saw that we make, which is a 5x10. And then, of course, we get into bigger saws, either with or without automation, so that you can cut those European 7x9 sheets. And then, of course, when you have a saw head that goes above 7 feet, how do you plunge? I'm 6 foot tall, and of course, Dave's the tallest of us sitting here around this table. 7 foot sheet sitting on those rollers, it's hard
already
to
a foot off the ground.
Yeah, and it's on rollers, and you're trying to plunge that. It's really a necessity when you're handling this large format size sheets.
Yeah,
and again, it goes back to what Dave talks about: plastics are 6 feet and other materials. So as you take on crazier and more sophisticated projects, having additional capacity, even if that leads to you buying a CNC or investing in a CNC at some point, most CNC routers are 4x8 or 5x10. Well, how do you cut 7 foot wide material on a 5 foot router? So
answer is you can't.
No. Right. You can always use a jigsaw, but that doesn't really work well.
Yeah. Like a 5x9 is, that's maxing out my height. That's about as high as I can reach is when I have to cross cut or make a vertical cut on a 5x9. But yeah, like the yield, I feel like on the European sizing ends up working out a lot better. Just having like that little bit of wiggle room, like that extra foot in height, when you want to cut stuff at 24, because you bang up the edges of your material and a half inch isn't enough sometimes. When you get into MDF, you got usually an inch over. But yeah, I mean, with melamine especially, you have not grain melamine, but just plain melamine, you have the ability to rotate your parts 90 degrees and you can really get a lot of stuff onto one of those big sheets.
Yeah, it's a difference of 60 or 65% yield to 75 or 80% yield.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're talking, white melamine's $1 a square foot, but if you're getting into Eggers material, that's a interesting super matte where there's no grain and it's $3 or $4 a square foot, man, all of a sudden that gets expensive.
Yeah. Yeah, that blue super matte stuff in there, some of those parts are 60 3/8. So I was able to just slice it, vertically and just trim just the tiniest bit off of either end. And I got great yield out of that material.
That's awesome. It's great to hear.
What's like the price point on the tippy top of the line, Striebig? 200,000.
Yeah, we the very tippy top.
Yeah,
is even over 200.
That's Mount Everest. That
is. Well, that's what everybody wants,
But that control that we were just describing, that's in the 80 to 100,000 typical. You can push it up over 100. The Mount Everest that we were just describing is our true full CNC machine, the 4D, with lifters, panel lifters,
and a pusher,
precision pusher along the bottom, so that you're actually processing the entire sheet from the bottom.
Oh, wow.
Of the sheet, while the rest of it's suspended in the lifters. So you cut a strip off the bottom, and that pusher pushes it across the saw, cross cuts it. So your operator's really just standing there taking off finished parts.
Wow.
Once he finishes that strip along the bottom, the lifters lower it down onto the rollers, and you cut another strip off the bottom and process that one until it's done, et cetera, et cetera. So you've never had to offload a portion of the sheet and put it back on the saw again.
Wow.
So it's like a
beam saw with like 1/10 of the footprint.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly,
a normal beam saw is going to be minimum 10, if not 12 foot cutting capacity, plus the program fence, plus your air table. So generally speaking, you need a 25x25 area. So now if we're getting into, at your book height, which is how many sheets you cut at a time, if your book height is 2 or 3 sheets, this 4D model can cut multiple sheets at a time. So if you're cutting checkerboard patterns in your shop, you have columns. So if you don't have 30 by 30 area to dedicate towards a beam saw and you still have the volume because you're cutting a bunch of rectangles and squares or non-machine parts, that's what people forget about a CNC router, is that you still have toe kick, filler, drawer parts, shelves, parts that aren't getting machined. And then when you get into the level of our control, maybe I'm getting ahead for a future podcast, but we'll have customers, and that's the whole purpose of this week here, is to film with you guys, and then we're going to shoot some other stuff as we launch our new website. So whoever's listening to the podcast, wait until May, then go on our website and see the new control, or the new website to see the control model, or go on YouTube and search control, and you'll be blown away. But you'll have customers that will buy the control with a router, because they'll send parts to the router that have machining, and non-machine parts will go to the control model, mm-hmm. so that all their small parts, because a router doesn't handle anything that's below 140 square inches, then they're using it as a beam saw, or maybe they're cutting drawer parts or et cetera. So as long as it doesn't require machining and you don't need a secondary touch, it makes a lot of sense on that. So you're right. The 4D model is basically a vertical beam saw and similar footprint to you have, but a little taller for the taller sheets and longer to handle the lifters.
Right. I have a question about tooling, but first I want to thank our sponsor before I forget. Ridge Carbide. When you need the right saw blade for the job, put your trust in Ridge Carbide tools. For over 50 years, Ridge Carbide has been producing industrial saw blades designed with exact specifications for the cutting results you expect. Before you buy, call Ridge Carbide and they'll help you determine the right tool that meets your needs and your budget. After the sale, Ridge Carbide provides sharpening services for all your saw blades, dado sets, router bits, and joiner planer knives. Located in Kansas, Ridge Carbide Tools provides high quality products with outstanding customer service at a fair price. What are you cutting? And also, I want to thank our sponsor, UNITA. You can go to sandpaper.com and use the code joinery15 to save 15%. And get yourself one of those 3x4 sanders. It's indispensable for us at this point. We use that thing for all of our paint prep and scuffing between coats. So check them out. My question was about tooling. So what's the cost and the lifespan difference between circular saw blade and router tooling? You know, there's got to be a big difference there between, you know, the life that you're going to get out of the tooling on a Striebig versus a router.
There's an industry standard for that. If you're using a router bit, so that's another benefit of having a vertical panel saw, is that a saw blade has a thinner kerf. Mm-hmm. And you can also cut faster with a saw blade than you can push a router bit through material. So we'll sell partner with high-end architectural millwork firms that are laying up their own veneer, and then all of a sudden grain becomes important as you look at a project and you have drawers or doors that you can't afford a 3/8 or a 1/2 inch or a 5/8 router bit.
Yeah, you cut 3/8 out and then you're going to bring them together a quarter mm-hmm. inch for an 1/8 inch gap. All of a sudden your grain is
off.
It's off. So we'll have that. And of course, customers will still need that, but I digress to answering your question. So if you look at a beam saw, a table saw, anything with just a saw blade, a good rule of thumb is 25 cents a sheet. That should be, and my dad is a little bit older now that I'm working for Colonial, but when you talk to the big panel processing companies, the rule of thumb, or if you talk to the tooling guys, you'll be 25 cents a sheet for a saw blade, and $1 a sheet if you're using a router.
Wow.
So four times the amount for cutting. So of course, if you're drilling, you still need your drill, but you're still drilling the same amount of holes, but it's a quarter of the cost to cut. It's faster. So as we talked about earlier, there's many ways to build a cabinet. There's many ways to cut the cabinet too.
Yeah. I wonder about the degradation too. Like, you know, day one saw blade versus router tooling, and then like sort of how, like, you know, how that affects the cut over time, you know, as you're, if at 50%, how's that compare in terms of quality? Like if your saw blade's at 50% or your router tooling's at 50%, it seems like you can get away with a lot more with like a circular saw blade. It's a pretty forgiving means of cutting. You know, we've all cut stuff with like a really dull blade, and it still works for the most part.
Are you trying to sell yourself into a scoring blade there?
No. But that's what I mean. Like, you know, we've all used that, like, honestly, you know, I was a carpenter before. Like, we've all used that circular saw blade that you cut through the shingles with to cut a 2x4, and you know, it still gets it done. But like a router, you can't get away with it with a router.
So no, you can, but it's called a workaround. So on when you're working with a nested base router, you're generally going to have 4, 5, 6, 7 tool positions. So you have to do a tool change. And this is where I said you can dumb down the operator, but you can't have a dumb operator. They have to be inspecting the parts. So that the router bit, depending if it's coated and if it's diamond or if it's carbide, you know, you can get 30 or 40 sheets, maybe more if it's coated or treated before you start to see chip out.
And wow, that's it?
You might get 60 if you're lucky.
Man.
So to your point about a saw blade, now you now have panel processing capability and you're getting more into casework. So if you start building a whole bunch of veneer or melamine boxes and you don't want to do the climb cut method, and of course the listeners here can watch the video as soon as John works his magic, which we're excited about, is you can add scoring to your saw. So you're right. Now all of a sudden the scoring blade not only gives you longevity, it gives you that forgiveness. And then, of course, you still need pre-mill on the edge bander, but you're not taking up as much kerf and material. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most shops cheat. They, whatever the thickness of the edge banding is how much they pre-mill off.
That's what we do, yeah. Just so, for maths.
It makes it so much easier. You cut the parts to final size, and then you pre-mill off what you put on. But for when you're cutting with a saw, no. Having a saw blade with scoring will give you much better longevity. And of course, yes, you still need to have it as a match set. And you need to make sure you're adjusting the kerf of the scoring blade to match your main blade. But there, it's not like you're going to just change out the router bit when it dulls to the other tool. Remember, you're going to get the router bit sharpened, or you're going to throw them away. But then you need to mic them again and then offset for your tool path. So there's some maintenance and some additional complexity. So people think of a CNC as the easy button. It's going to cure all and save all. No, there's a level of sophistication and complexity that's required to run it. You're moving the knowledge into the office that then has to compensate for that. So you're right. Saw blade works really, really well. But don't run shingles through your street big, please. No,
God. That compact laminate was bad enough. That felt like abuse.
Just eat your Wheaties.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was definitely a physical job because, you know, it had to sort of feed so slow because it was such a hard material. And I'm assuming that, you know, the saw blade that I was using was probably not the correct one. I even tried using a solid surface blade which I thought would be, you know, they seem like comparable materials, but, cause I ended up, had to do some really small parts. I ended up doing them on the cabinet saw because I had a solid surface blade and that didn't want to cut it at all.
How heavy was the material?
Oh, it was brutal. I think they were 4x10s. And what did we buy? 4 of them. And the pallet said it was 600 pounds. So yeah, about 150 pounds a sheet.
You definitely had to eat your Wheaties then. Those mornings.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then the edge, right? Where you wear those nice gloves in all your videos.
Yeah.
Did those hold up to the edge when you were cutting? You're handling those parts?
Yeah, they did pretty good. The problem with that stuff is it wants to burn and turn like that brown color. Then you have to sand all that back. And
well, you were going to have to treat the edges in some manner anyway.
No, not with this stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's a solid. Actually, let me see. I have it right
here. So the better the saw cut, the less work you were going to have to do afterward.
I think I threw it out.
You hated it that much and you just wanted to get out of sight, out of mind permanently.
I had like the Wilson Art, like little lookbook that has all the colors and a couple samples. I think I got rid of it because I said never again. So I actually ended up, this is like sacrilege, I ended up using the joiner to clean up the edges and just turned the carbide cutters that ended up getting totally destroyed, you know, which gave me some nice horizontal chatter, but very even and small that I could then just sand off pretty easily. But yeah, I was getting, you know, your classic circular saw marks on the edges.
Sounds like next time you have a crazy project like that, you got to call Professor Strebing over here.
Yeah, we can attack some tooling.
Yeah, I'm sure there had to be a better way. Otherwise, who would use that material?
Right.
Heavy, hard, difficult. Oh,
expensive.
And you didn't charge enough for the job.
No. I got the price of the material correct, but yeah, not the PETA tax. You know, this stuff's like $21 a square foot. So.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, 10 times normal cost of melamine or whatever.
Yeah, but your labor costs, you way underestimated.
Oh, yeah.
The handling and then the
all the aggravation, you know, having to pre-drill all of these, you know, so a number 8 screw is whatever you call it. Use like an 1/8-inch pilot hole. Having to drill like a 1/64 over, you know, just like so that the threads are just barely engaging with it because anything else would break the screw. And so it took me, it was 4 cabinets. This is for a salon for like a shampooing area. They had issues with the other cabinets with water damage. So they wanted to build them out of this. I would have just used AZEK, you know, or Starboard, something like that.
Solid AZEK surface.
But to build the cases, you know, 3/4-inch AZEK board is like, whatever, I don't even know, $150. This stuff is meanwhile, what's 21 times 32? A lot.
$650.
Yeah. Where was I going with this? It was 4 cabinets and like pilasters between. Or sorry, 7 cabinets, pilasters between. It took me 2 or 3 full days just to assemble the cabinets because of all of that pre-drilling and screwing. And I was, you know, the quality didn't come out the way I had hoped just because, you know, very brittle. So I was like chipping pieces off and it was bad.
You're now wiser. That's the cost of wisdom.
Yeah, there's only one way out. I would say there's only one way out, and it's straight through. Like, you just got to get it done and just move on to the next one. But
right.
What do you think? We just ticked over an hour. I know you guys got a busy day. You have any closing thoughts for the listeners?
I think we did a great... You teed us up and helped Dave and I get rid of our nervous jitters. I need a lot of teeing up.
Wasn't too bad, right?
No. Hopefully next... When we come back next time, we'll be a little bit more comfortable doing this podcast.
I thought you guys did good.
I'm not like that old, but geez, I feel ancient when it comes to doing podcasts. I listen to them, but to have to make one,
and I'm older than you are.
No, I'd say we appreciate the opportunity to talk a little bit more about Colonial and our history, and talk about the quality of Strebig, and also highlight that, you know, we have a full range, and that where they're beneficial, and that, you know, the future content that you create from the videos between Today's Craftsman and Green Street, that our job is to educate, right? We really spent a lot of time in this conversation talking about education and shared values. And I think the three of us sitting around this table have those shared values. We're here to inform, educate, and improve. So I think if we continue to do that in the coming months and years, I think it'll be beneficial, not just for us, but the listeners, right? It never hurts to help a customer.
Yeah.
Right. That's, sales will take care of themselves, but
You do the right thing, then good things happen. So from our side, I'd like to come back again in 6 months or next time we're in the area, and we'll do another podcast, and I'll be better prepared and ramble less. And then,
the rambling is key. Rambling is key. That's people love the rambling. That's what they want to hear.
Oh, so we should do this like at 4:30 with beers, and then
that's what we used to do. We had a beer of the week, so Rob and I would go back and forth, and like, you know, surprise the other person with like a random beer that we, you know, and usually something crazy, like whatever. We had like waffle beer and like all these wacky
waffles, Strusel.
Yeah, all these wacky flavors. But then we started recording four podcasts in one day to like knock out the whole month when we were really busy. Ooh. And we were like, yeah, we can't.
No, you're slurring words in the
and we would start at like 9 a.m., you know, like can't do this. Yeah. I mean, we have ones that go like 4 hours.
Ooh. Wow. I can't talk on anything for that long.
You'd be surprised.
No,
the first hour is the hardest.
Maybe beer, actually. But
well, oh yes, that's the lubricity that you need, Dave. And then all we need is just to ask you a Streebig question, and you'll talk about Streebig forever.
I can go on and on.
It's we don't want to just talk about our product. Right? We want this to be informative and dialogue. Right. You know, we have to talk about other things. That's the hard part. The stuff that we do it because we love it and we enjoy it. So we're going to talk about it. It's when we get teed up with questions on. What's better, a saw blade or a router bit tooling cost? And what about screen to machine and post processors? And then, oh, wait a second. I have to think. And then you're worried about the and the ahs and the, right. As people listen to the podcast, you're like, do I really sound like that?
Who are these guys?
They know now.
Yeah. So no, I'm happy to do it because, right. If we're a resource, remember, now I'm wearing my salesman hat. Colonial Saw doesn't just sell Streebig. So, you know, we want to be the information source. Even if we're not going to sell you something, we want to be the first person you call. And then that goes back to like-minded values. So, no, I have enjoyed this, even though it was a little uneasy or unnerving at first. Hopefully, Dave.
We're doing what?
No, you guys did good.
Yeah, and this was thrown on us. So, for the listeners, I don't know if it's 2 or 2,000, but... We filmed up our video and then let's do a podcast. A what? So you're right. Actually, the first hour and 6 minutes now, whoever's still listening to us ramble.
Oh, yeah, they're listening.
It's been great. And
it's been fun.
Yeah, I look forward to doing it again. I'd be more than up for it.
Yeah, we can't wait to have you guys back.
All right, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening. And we'll see you next week.
We truly appreciate you listening. If you want to support the show, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, share the show with your friends, or consider subscribing to our Patreon. We'll see you next week.